Drilling fluids touch just about everything in the drilling process. We're here to deconstruct the drilling process and drilling fluid concepts to provide a deeper understanding of our industry. In each episode, we'll share information, talk to interesting people, and maybe share a few stories along the way. Welcome to The Flow Line, a production of AES Drilling Fluids, brought to you by Matt Offenbacher and Justin Gauthier.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of The Flow Line, here with my lovely co-host, Mr. Matt Offenbacher. It's, it's a beautiful time in Houston right now with the spring weather. Matt, we just got off a spring break, and how was it? Did you do anything fun and exciting?
Let's see, took the kids to the rodeo. And
did you go to the Journey concert?
I did not. I heard it was a different kind of boondoggle than taking my kids to the rodeo.
Well, yeah, except for it was like a quarter of a boondoggle. The electricity, I guess, went out. The whole show ended about halfway through the third song.
Oh, it was that early on. That stinks.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is it's like we're in the energy capital of the world, supposedly.
Can't keep the lights on.
Can't even keep the lights on at the rodeo. But it's the way she blows sometimes, you know? It's unfortunate. I wasn't there, but I did have a customer who attended, and so but they seem to be in good spirits considering, because I'm pretty sure the alcohol was still flowing afterwards. So
And I mean, look, I don't consider that venue, like, yes, it's a fun part of going to the rodeo, and it's part of like being a Houstonian for sure.
Yeah,
but like, it's not like incredible acoustics, and like if you're waiting out your favorite band to see them at the rodeo, you're probably making the wrong choice.
Yeah.
I saw Journey at like Cynthia Woods years ago.
Okay.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of old people, but I'm old now too. But anyways, I would say, like, you know, you got to have your dedicated venue where everybody's excited. You know, whereas it's the featured event, I guess is the way to put it.
Yeah. The last concert I went to with a live band, and it was totally impromptu. I was in Oklahoma City for meetings, and the night before I left, Pearl Jam was in town.
Really?
And yeah, got to see Pearl Jam, and
that's,
it was
pretty epic.
Hilarious. Yeah. And it was actually because they had actually had to reschedule because they were supposed to be there during COVID. Got canceled, rescheduled. I just so happened to be staying at the Omni, which is right across
from there, yeah.
And I took it, me and another gentleman, Chance Gailey, were there for meetings, and we're in an Uber, and they're like, oh, so you're here for the Pearl Jam concert? And we're like, what? No, but tell us more. And then next thing you know, we ended up going with a customer just for fun, and it was hilarious. We didn't stay the whole time, but the people watching, I mean, the amount of folks that were, you know, maybe a decade or so older than us wearing Pearl Jam gear just rocking out was... It was hilarious. It's not something I would have ever otherwise spent money on, but it just in the moment, we were just like, why not? Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a pretty good time.
Excellent.
Are you a Pearl Jam guy?
I'm not one of those people. Okay. You know, they definitely put out some good songs. I think, you know, I may or may not own a couple of albums, but,
oh, that's great.
You know, but I had those friends who were like way, way into them, you know, and it was like, okay, I like them, but I can't talk to you about them.
Right.
So, anyways, that.
They made an impact in American culture, I feel, at some point.
No doubt.
Yeah, but anyways, much as we like to talk about live bands and all the fun stuff that happened at the rodeo, we're going to move on to drilling fluids. We're going to dive into the weeds with a magnifying glass and a microscope to talk about none other than nanoparticles. For those who don't work in sort of a lab environment, or maybe who get caught up in the science of things, it may not be something that you're familiar with, but the reality is it does play a part in the drilling fluids world. And so it'd be good to kind of dissect nanoparticles and what it means for us in the drilling fluids space. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I had come across a couple of mud companies using them, and this, we've done an episode on nanoparticles in the past, I believe.
Yeah.
You know, it comes and goes, it comes in waves kind of thing. And so I guess it's one of those, fear not, we're going to walk you through it, where they could be useful, that kind of thing. And, you know, of course, I'll have my skeptical explanation of some things too, but I think it's worth diving into, just because maybe there's another wave of new products that are going to take advantage of them.
Yeah, no kidding. So to get things started, obviously it's important to understand the definition of what is a nanoparticle.
So the interesting thing, so, you know, we have our little units of measure, and here we are with the metric system. But like a micron, which a lot of people are familiar with, you know, 10 to the minus 6 meters, right? So a tiny fraction of a meter, micrometer.
Très petite, as we can say back home.
And then 10 to the minus 9 is 1 nanometer, right? So it's 1,000 times smaller than 1 micron. However, when we talk about nanoparticles, what's interesting is just because it has nano in front of it as far as particle diameter, most of the time when we're talking about nanotechnology, we're looking at things that are particles of less than 100 nanometers. So, you know, there are products we're certainly familiar, and I think we have a few that would have particles that are 999 nanometers. Technically begins with nano. However, for the sake of our conversation, we were going to lean into these very, very, you know, even smaller particles that sort of in the nanotech world, we'd assume would be smaller than that, below 100 nanometers.
Man, that's so. What you have in your notes are usually distributed in a slurry. Can you further elaborate on that?
Yeah. So these very tiny particles. This sort of harkens back to, I mean, probably the late aughts. You know, 2005, 2007. Nanotech was all the rage, and I mean, there's a lot of cool possible applications. But one of the big concerns was health, and there were a lot of concerns about these fine particles getting in your lungs and inhalation risk and that sort of thing. Well, almost all of these products are going to appear as a slurry. So what that means is you buy them as a liquid, and the particles are floating around in there, and that's how you apply it. So when you add it to mud, you're emptying out a bucket. You know, you stir it around, you empty it out in a bucket. Some of them may be agglomerated particles, so it may be a solid, but then when they go into a liquid phase, they break up into smaller pieces. But, you know, in handling, they're clumped together, so they're not in that fine state that people worry about. I mean, review your safety data sheets and understand what you're handling, but that's traditionally, they're going to be slurries, and, you know, probably the usual suspects, silicon dioxide, aluminum trioxide, titanium dioxide, iron oxide. And then, you know, everybody likes to use graphene, right? So graphene, it's carbon, but it's like in nanotubes, tubule shapes. But the other thing that I think sometimes people overlook on the nano side is clay particles. So like broken apart, individualized clay particles can actually be nano. It's like sepulite, lapinite. So you can sort of intentionally engineer clay products to have that nanoparticle distribution when they're all separated and broken apart.
So something that maybe is a bit more familiar, let's talk about the use cases of some of these nanoparticles.
Yeah, so I'll start with weighting agents. You know, there are some products out there where you might actually be able to increase the density by just adding these fine particles, similar to barite, right? The difference is really, really fine particles, especially if they have some coating on them, tend to maybe not interact with each other. And so, and you don't have to worry about settling because these particles are so light, basically any agitation whatsoever sort of makes them, you know, mix up immediately, and because they're such fine particles, they take a very long time to gravitationally settle. So there are cases of using as a weighting agent. I know there was a completion fluid years ago where they used it to increase the density of the brine, because we've talked about some of those limitations in the past. So that's one possible application.
Okay. One that I think you were going to mention it, but the one that comes to mind for me is lubricants. So, I mean, is it pretty common to find nanoparticles in drilling fluid lubricants?
I mean, most of these are probably, like, common is probably a word I have to be careful with, because has been used before versus is used regularly. I mean, so some of this stuff still seems pretty novel. There are some lubricant products that I've seen for sale. Where the idea would be that those really fine particles would settle in sort of the rough surfaces of metal and smooth it out, and that would improve your lubricity. So, you know, complement a surfactant-based lubricant. And I know those were trialed, you know, in the Bakken. So they're not unheard of. And, you know, the idea is even those little small particles sort of can help with standoff between two surfaces, right? But on a very, very tiny level, I think, you know, I could see it either way where, you know, we've looked at some of these products and they didn't do what we hoped, but, you know, it may be that they're so small that they don't create and they're not big enough to actually keep those surfaces separate. But, lubricant applications certainly has been done and trialed before. And the cool thing with that is if you can make that work, those really small particles, guess what? They don't separate out at the shakers.
Right.
Right. So you can keep that stuff in there.
Gotcha. What about, talk about the filtration control, because I feel like there's a pretty good application there, or at least in my mind anyway.
No, I think you're bang on. I think this is probably the best possible application. So I think that when you think, we've talked about bridging in the past and sealing, well, you use your sort of broad-based spectrum of calcium carbonate and graphite or whatever particles you're using, and then these nanoparticles can hopefully provide seals in between those seals, right? So you have two particles kind of bridging, and then something fits in between them, and then, well, this is just sort of like the next step down. And so it should help consolidate the filter cake, you know, a bit. I would say that some of the cool things, I could imagine if you are in a super critical well where you're doing a bunch of logging, high pressure, high temperature, you know, and you need tight, tight fluid loss, you don't want to get stuck, you're under very high overbalance, this stuff could be a great sealing supplement to everything else you're doing to keep your fluid loss, you know, low, low, low. So I think there's a place for the, you know, for that stuff. The only caution I would give is, I have seen in the past where because the particle size distribution is somewhat more homogeneous of these particles, if they don't provide that seal, they actually form this kind of, I've seen them form this kind of like gel on top of the filter cake and actually make it kind of like thicker and nastier. And I assume it's just because it continues to leak off. And now you're getting sort of this fluff that I would worry you could get stuck or it could create other issues.
Sure.
So proceed with caution, but could be a really good use case. And I think it has been used, especially in oil-based mud. I could see it working really well.
Gotcha. What about shale inhibition for, say, fracked shales?
So I think for fractured shales, we've talked about this to some degree, but remember, you know, it has very, very low permeability, like nanodarcies. So a lot of times when we talk about sealing, we're talking about sealing a sandstone or a limestone, something that's got some open spaces to plug up. But shale, the problem is the permeability isn't zero. It's not that no fluid can get in. It's that not a lot of fluid can get in. So in a lot of wells, that doesn't matter because not a lot of fluid gets in. You get in, you get out of the hole, you're fine. However, if you are able to have some of that fluid leak off into a shale that's prone to breakout, prone to fracturing, that little bit of leak off could allow those planes to separate a little bit, and then you could have some wellbore stability issues. And so think of this as a very, very fine, a nano plugging agent for nano darcy perm rock or shale, where it sort of just creates that seal a little bit earlier and limits that separation. And so there have been a lot of studies. Sharma, professor at the University of Texas, he's got a few good papers kind of 2012, 2014 era describing this mechanism with some good, you know, microscope pictures. Do we call it nanoscope?
Yeah.
100%. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And a big thing about that too is trying to control your spurt loss. I mean, when we've talked about fluid loss, you have sort of the fluid that shoots out before you form a seal, and then you have like once it's sort of plugged up, how it looks. And that initial spurt of fluid is normally what you're watching for interaction with a formation. So very fine particles lower that. You'd be amazed at what you can do with just some fine calcium carbonate. A lot of people, you know, leave that out. And I would say, you know, it could be a pretty handy thing. this would be probably on top of that. If you were still having higher spurt loss than you wanted, you could, some nanoparticles might help with that packing efficiency.
Okay. What about, I mean, was there anything else that, that you could use nanoparticles in? I mean, off the top of my head, I can't think of any, but.
I mean, there are these other sort of offset observations people make. So one, a weird thing with nanoparticles, because they sort of, you know, they're sort of operating in their own universe in some ways. They can actually stick to and interact with other mud additives and make them more thermally stable. So they limit sort of oxidation reaction or limit some of these other things that, so, you know, they can, even though they're an inert particle, act as a stabilizer in certain cases. The other thing is, just because there's surface area and everything, anything that needs surface area. So an oil-based mud, if you wanted to raise the electrical stability, you'd probably get it by throwing this stuff in, because it would help those droplets coalesce better. In the same way, like organoclay helps oil-based mud droplets stick together, just adding a little bit of solids. But this is like very high surface area, you know, and without affecting other mud properties, you may get tighter emulsions. You know, I think those are kind of sort of ancillary benefits. I don't know if you'd like want a product that explicitly does those things, but right. They can help.
Well, and so that may, I mean, I guess maybe it's a question maybe people are thinking of. So there's not any sack material that are strictly nanoparticles. They're typically mixed off with or in addition to other products, right? Any other materials?
Yeah, I mean, I never say never, but generally these products are. I mean, there's so many like lab-based applications versus sometimes you would add it. So I mentioned the lubricant that has nanoparticles, and they added a lubricating surfactant. So it was
right.
Two things together in a tote, I think. So like you have that kind of stuff. A lot of it, and part of this, I think, is that these particles can be quite expensive. Is you'd have like a separate bucket and you'd dump it in the mud system as like a supplement to what you're already doing. To get your properties, you wouldn't like add three things together in a bag and say, hey, it's got some nano stuff in there to help out per se. But I could be totally wrong on that these days. That's just my general experience.
Okay. So what other considerations one might need to think about when either using or thinking of using nanoparticles?
It's like all that, like we're talking about a tool in the toolbox, and I mean, I think that's why we love trying to make people aware of all these different things, is it could help you. However, do the lab testing. Is it the only thing? Do you want to use it because it's cool? Do you want to use it because it's efficient? It probably costs more than what you're doing right now. That's why it's not all over every rig we work on. So, you know, what is your use case, and can you do the lab testing against all your other choices and say, this is the most efficient one for me? Because it costs more, but with that, hopefully you get a benefit that makes it cheaper for your overall drilling operation, right? There are some weird things that can happen as far as rheology, gel strengths. Some of them aren't as soluble at high pH. You know, you want to test at your drilling scenario,
right?
And maybe even a little bit outside that, to make sure that you're not going to trick it into doing something that you don't want it to do on a rig. Find that out in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the last one I would say is, from a formation damage perspective, there's a lot of, oh, it's so small that it won't damage the formation. Well, do your own due diligence, because these products have been tested in enhanced oil recovery and other things, and they have certainly found where it can damage the formation. So you would think it's so fine that it can't plug off like a regular sandstone reservoir. And to some degree, that's true, but to another degree, it can interact with other things. It can clump up under certain formation conditions. And in light of that, it could cause damage. So make no assumptions. And see where it gets you.
Gotcha. So why would you, any ideas as to why this stuff really hasn't taken off, or really any revolutionary, you know, product mix that is like really primarily nanoparticles?
You know, the first go around, it seemed to be there was a lot of concern about safety. I don't think people really understood nanoparticles. If you use the word nano, people would freak out. And a lot of that was from some studies, I believe, or it's my understanding, had to do with inhalation risk. And it was like, well, this stuff's only distributed in a slurry. It's not going to be floating around like a dust that can get everywhere. So I think they're like the first big opportunity really got hammered by that. Then I think you've got your sort of cycle of downturns, like introducing a new product in 2012, right before 2014. And then yes, cost is the elephant in the room, but I also think that like we sort of had these waves of sort of concern or that kind of thing. And then the other part is like, it's still got to do better than the in-between. And by that, I mean, I think we've talked about fine grind Bayrite in the past. And fine grind Bayrite, so there's different kinds and granite. There's new terminology for this, but way back when there was stuff that had a D50 of 10 microns, a D50 of 5 microns, and a D50 of 1 micron. And like D50 of 1, like that's super good, right? Well, if you go selling that all the time, if that's what you're saying, everything you say about it, how it can help, is true. But somebody says, hey, I can do it a lot cheaper for a D50 of 5 or a D50 of 10 and could get you most of the way there, then you go back and use that. And so I think with nanoparticles, one thing is we grind up a lot of stuff while we're drilling. So if you have inert solids in your mud, a lot of it's going to get ground down, and it might not be to 100 nanometers, but if it's 500 nanometers, that may be good enough. So there may be a chance that you're making your own nanoparticles too. And so you have to be in these more extreme wells to justify the use case.
Yeah,
and you're sort of getting away with it with other products in the interim.
Hmm.
So those were a couple of my thoughts.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, again, it's, coming from my side of the table, it's not something that is really packaged and marketed in the world, but it is, part, like you said, a tool in the toolbox. And it's something to be aware of. Again, yeah. Just, really on the education piece and informing folks of what's out there. Because most of us just look at a sack and, understand what it does and what properties it changes. But the reality, there's just so many neat sort of things that go into product mix, and nanoparticles could be one of them, depending on what you're using. That's all the questions, Matt, I had. Any kind of closing last words or thoughts before we wrap it up?
My closing last words are, I really like Justin's shirt today, so I'm glad we're doing video and everybody can,
this is a
cool pattern. I'm not a like slave to fashion by stretch, but
thank you so much.
And you make it look good too, right, buddy?
I typically like to give roses, not receive them. So I'll take that and appreciate that. And for all the listeners out there, I have no idea what brand it is, in case any other fashionistas out there are wondering. I'll have to double check, because it's actually an old shirt that I got tailored, but I left it at the tailor's for like months. And they finally called me back and said, hey, we've had your shirt now since before Christmas. Do you mind coming and getting it? So anyway, that's the story behind that. But appreciate it. And, for those, I don't know, maybe have noticed, Matt's upped his game. I noticed you've upped your wardrobe game, Matt.
I try.
Well, now that we're on video, and actually for the viewers watching this on YouTube, we're actually going to kind of redo the whole studio, which I'm fired up about.
Jazz it up.
Yeah, a little... maybe we'll just surprise folks when it happens. But we're kind of redoing, we can officially call it a studio. So lots of exciting things to look forward to. But the reality is we live and die by cutting sacks at the hopper and delivering exceptional service. We're going to keep doing that.
Absolutely.
First and foremost. And then podcasts on the side, because it's kind of like, cool and fun to do too. But with that being said, everyone, appreciate the support. And, again, be sure to subscribe. We've got YouTube. We've got obviously the podcast. We just put out, it's not a tech tip, Matt. Tech Bites?
Tech
Bites. Can you share that again?
So we've learned, as everyone's attention span shortens, that one great thing we can do is actually take some things that we've made as like these full tech tips that might be 3 or 4 minutes and make them real, just to the point, short, sweet, and jazz them up a little bit. So the marketing guys have sort of made it a little more concise, and dolled it up. And so like, yeah, we have a tech bite that just came out on viscosity, and it's a good summary of rheology and everything you want to know.
It's great. Big shout out to the marketing team on that front. And with that said, again, if you have any questions, thoughts, ideas for a show, reach to us out on LinkedIn, connect with us on LinkedIn, especially the AES Foods page, website. You've got everything you need on there to learn more. And with that being said, everyone, take care for now and be safe. Cheers.
Take care.
Thanks for listening. Please tune in next week for another exciting episode of The Flow Line. And remember, may your returns always be full and your trips always smooth. Views expressed in this program belong to participants and not their employees. The program is for informational purposes only and cannot take the place of seeking professional advice. Copyright AES Drilling Fluids.